हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 14. Uh-oh. Yeah, we'll just start from here. Verses 47 to 52. The Jamuna becomes poisoned. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that with the completion of the description of pastimes on the day of Kartik Gopastami, now there is the description of summer pastimes. On this day, again, Balaram was not present because he was kept home by his mother for taking Shanti bath on his birthday. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King, the Supreme Lord Krishna thus wandered about the Vrindavan area, performing his pastimes. Once, surrounded by his boyfriends, he went without Balaram to the Jamuna River. At that time, the cows and cowherd boys were feeling acute distress from the glaring summer sun. Afflicted by thirst, they drank the water of the Jamuna River, but it had been contaminated with poison. As soon as they touched the poisoned water, all the cows and boys lost their consciousness by the divine power of the Lord and fell lifeless at the water's edge. O hero of the Kurus, seeing them in such a condition, Lord Krishna, the master of all masters of mystic potency, felt compassion for these devotees who had no Lord other than him. Thus he immediately brought them back to life by showering his nectarian glance upon them. Regaining their full consciousness, the cows and boys stood up out of the water and began to look at one another in great astonishment. O King, the cowherd boys then considered that although they had drunk poison, and in fact had died simply by the merciful glance of Govinda, they had regained their lives and stood up by their own strength. 47 to 52. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, They rose from the bank in great astonishment. We were dead. How did we come back to life? What medicine or mantra for removing poison was used? They looked at one another, saying with their eyes, Friend, do you know what is the secret? Then one friend answered with a glance, I know the cause of our rescue. Listen. I remember the words of Gargacharya at the name-giving ceremony of Krishna and Balaram. This child will save you from all dangers very easily. This is the secret. Saying this with his glance to the other boys, they all remembered Smrityaha. With absorption, the object Krishna, Pratita. By this, they all became astonished. Then they concluded positively that the cause of their rescue was the merciful glance of Govinda, empowered by Narayana, the worshipful deity of Nanda. Having drunk poison and died, they had been revived from death. He was the cause of that. But so still, they don't really see him as that he is Narayan. They'll even take him as, okay, empowered by Narayan, because Gargacharya said he'll be as good as Narayan. So he was keeping it hidden about the principle that he is Narayan. Because there, it doesn't matter to them because of their affection. Right? So just that the emphasis on that aspect will distract from their devotion. So it's alluded to, but it's not actually an important point. Because their love is so great that they can handle the greater opulence of Vrindavan. And it doesn't disturb the sweetness, because the sweetness is the main flavor. Therefore, the opulence can increase, you know, how much is necessary for Krishna and his pastimes. Well, in Vaikuntha, then the opulence is there and is great, but it has to stay at a particular limit, because otherwise the devotees there, if it goes too far beyond, then they'll lose that mood of service because of the greatness, like we see with Arjuna. Arjuna, then, when he's faced with the universal form, it disturbs his rasa, right? While Mother Jashoda, it doesn't disturb her. The rasa remains, it just becomes bewildering. You understand? So that's the Brajabasis. They have a uniqueness like that. So here they're able to accommodate that he has all these nice opulences, but it doesn't matter because they have their relationship, especially the Shakya Ras. It doesn't have any real problem with how great Krishna is, you know, because they see themselves as equals, so the greater he is, the greater they become. So it's not actually a problem for them. Right? Other rasas, then it will get in the way.
Maharaj, the different demons that Krishna killed, you know, that was a point of more astonishment than this. But here they are really very much astonished when they came from this. Why is this?
Why are they astonished? Because, see, there's a difference between the demon being dead. It means demons are alive, demons become dead. That's standard, right?
Mm-hmm.
But people who are dead generally don't come back to life. Right? Okay?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So all this is done with that affection. Right? So they know this. They'll compare him to, sometimes think of him as demigods, or he's empowered by the Lord, or like this and that, but then it'll very quickly move on. It just, you know, increases their devotion. It doesn't distract from it. That's the uniqueness of the Brajabasis. Okay, chapter 16. Krishna chastises the serpent Kaliya, Pratigya. Although one who tries to give trouble to Vaishnavas by infecting them with malice may have some initial success, it is only to embolden them to next direct their attack towards Krishna himself, who then easily restores the faith of his loyal servants. Right? So the point is if we have this malice towards Vaishnavas, we have to understand that the next step will be Krishna. Right? Because the most important thing to Krishna is his devotees. Right? So we'll just use a local example, since, how you say, there's a saying, let's say, I think if you get two Marwaris together, they'll start a business. If you get two Punjabis together, they'll start a trucking company. Right? And if you get two Bengalis together, they'll start a political party. Okay? So since we're talking about the malice and politics here, then we can, with confidence, go on like this. Now, Bengalis, here's the thing is, they're, because of their gentleness, they don't necessarily like to directly harass someone. Right? So how do you harass the person sufficiently without directly harassing them? That's there where we're discussing politics. I take no Bengalis here, right? No? Means you harass someone who's important to the person that is there. You're nice with the person, you just harass everybody else. Right? So the whole point is that that's how it goes. That's just how politics works. Right? So that's the whole point, is that when it's based on political dealings according to Shastra, then you're trying to deal with diplomacy in such a way to get the effect for the benefit of your people. It's not about trying to get the other person. It's just that person is, that king or that kingdom or personalities are creating problem for the people. And so therefore you have to deal with them in such a way that nullifies that problem. Right? Once nullified, then there's no further need to deal with that person. Or there's no need to carry on dealing in a way that will be opposing to them. Does it make sense?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Yes? Okay, as long as it makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, then, you know, how you say, next birth is Radhadesh. Means this side of the Ganga is called that. Yeah.
Maharaj, and this tendency will be usually in the Kanishtha Adhikaris.
Kanishthas, yeah, generally will do this. Like that. Madhyamas tend to appreciate devotees. That's what marks the difference. Like that. So, by going after the devotees, since they're dear to Krishna, then the next natural step is Krishna. One may say, no, no, it's not like that. But the point is that's how it works. That's how the modes of nature work. Right? So that's why we have to be very careful in this. So that's what we're learning here. We're seeing how it works, and this way we become purified. Right? So this aspect is there, is that when we work and it works on somebody, then we become more proud, more bold, so that we start to extend it. And there's no, because of false ego, then what happens? What's real ego? I'm servant of Krishna. False ego is I'm something special according to my material identity. So having false ego automatically is opposed to Krishna. And so when we deal with envy in that, it just increases that. Because what's the original envy? Right? Envy of Krishna. You understand? So we have to understand these are not just somebody, no, but this person deserves it, or they're being like this and that. Means if you want to work on the platform of mundane justice, okay. But the whole point is that if you want to go back to Godhead, then it has to be looked at from the devotional point of view, which is pleasing to Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point.
So can we say that this is one extreme wherein you have, if you have malice towards devotees, you have malice towards Krishna. But the other extreme would be if you have affection towards the devotees, then slowly and gradually affection towards Krishna will develop.
Yes. Means the malice towards devotees will mean malice towards Krishna, and affection towards the devotees will bring that affection towards Krishna.
So this means,
but it still has to be done according to Scripture. Because
yes.
Otherwise people may say, no, but they behave badly, but are your dealings with them according to Scripture? Because if they are, there may be some element of purification. But if they're not, it's just going to bind. You understand? So in the same way as dealing with Krishna devotees with affection, is it according to Scripture? Or is it according to what we think is affection towards devotees? You know what I'm saying? Because the point is the more mundane it is, the more we expect something for that endeavor. Right? I'm showing affection to devotees. I expect that affection to come back in a particular way. Right, but if I'm showing affection because this is how you're supposed to deal with devotees, then that's scriptural. Then you're functioning in goodness. So goodness means you don't expect any result for your endeavor. So from goodness, then you can go to pure goodness. But if our endeavor of affection towards the devotees is in passion or ignorance, then it's going to cultivate in that way. You know? Does that make sense? So these subtleties have to be seen. It's not just the form. The four means if we're, let's say, we're coming from a, whatever background we're coming from, we will take the form of what we're using as good, right? So now if by chance it happens to be good, you know, according to what's recommended, then that's very nice. But the problem is it's still secondary. And the primary is always the forefront. Right? Does that make sense? Let us say Mother Jashoda is cooking for Krishna. Then the element of how to please Krishna is the forefront in her mind. She'll pay attention to the detail because that's how she gets something nice for Krishna. But it's not that because she's cooking, putting effort into the detail of cooking, that means that the consciousness is there. Right? For Mother Jashoda, yes, that's what makes her who she is, because of love for Krishna, that's the main primary aspect. The secondary is then the particular forms and actions they follow to express that. But since we don't have that love for Krishna, then we have that love for ourselves. Then we're put into the material situation that as our desires change, those forms and our activities change. Right? Because with Krishna, then the affection is fixed. That's why it's called Sthayi Bhava. It doesn't change. That's why they have one spiritual body. It doesn't change. But because we don't have, I mean, we can say we have Sthayi Bhava for ourselves, but how we want to please ourselves, that changes. Right? And since we are not the source of the potency to please ourselves, that's coming from Krishna. That means then as we change how we want to please ourselves, our situations and body and abilities have to change to match that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? But Krishna, he's pleasing himself, but he's the source of his energy. So just his desire to please himself in a particular way, the energies already carry it out. So he does not have to change. But we have to change. Right? Plus, there's no common standard. We say it's about ourselves, but in actuality, it's not even actually about ourselves, because we're the soul. So, we want to enjoy like Krishna, but that's not actually the nature of the soul. So then the soul actually has to take on an external nature, or identify with an external nature, to actually practice that philosophy. Does that make sense? Therefore, the material body has to be there. And it will change. Because with Krishna, he knows what he likes, and within unlimited, he can stay within what he likes. Mm-hmm. But for us, we want to be happy. That's all we know. And when we try one thing and it doesn't work, we try something else. And when we run out of pious options, we will take the impious ones. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's why then the body has to change. So you see there's a difference there. So we must do that. Right? So, therefore, we have to be able to define between the externals that we're using and the internal. Because if we just take it for granted that the internal, the spiritual aspect's going on automatically, like, I'm doing my work, I'm good at, I have the knowledge, I'm good at it, and I'm doing it for Krishna, of course it's for Krishna. But how do you catch symptoms that it's not? Because you can tell the difference between pure goodness and goodness, and goodness and passion and that and ignorance. So you can see the effect, you can see the qualities being used. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? You're just like, let's say, no, okay. Does that make sense? So, let's say we're managing. And so, of course, we're managing for Krishna. But the point is, unless the consciousness is regularly bringing that fact to the forefront, how do we decide what is the best aspect of management? Right? Because I want to accomplish something. And so to accomplish something, I want to be efficient. Because the more efficient it is, the better the result is. Right? But if we see that we may managerially do things that work, let's say, in the corporate world. Right? I'm only going to use the corporate world as an example because I don't think anybody in the room works in governance. Right? Does that make sense? Because the people are proud of their managements because not because they're in governance, it's because they're in corporate. Only middle managers become proud. Right? Administrators don't. You know, some politicians do, but administrators don't because you have to remain sober. But somehow there's an idea in corporate management that the bigger your false ego, the better your management. I'm not sure how it goes together, but that's why the middle management never becomes the boss because they don't have the qualities. You understand? So that aside, then so now. Let's say something would work in the corporate world. In the corporate world, if I step on toes, is it not allowed? It's allowed, yes, of course. Because whatever is efficient, as long as you don't step on, you know, the boss's toes. But you can step on everybody else's toes. You can cut out all other middle managers. You can completely walk over everybody else in the company, as long as you get the work done. And if you can walk over other companies, that's even better. Right? So the whole point is it's efficient. Right? Because you don't have to consider feelings, you don't have to consider individuals, you just have to see the mechanics of getting the work done. Right? In other words, it's just niti.
Yes.
It's not even technically artha. The boss is doing artha, the middle manager is doing niti. Right? One should know this. They're not the same like that. So, then, now we apply this in Krishna consciousness, right? So now if we're a Krishna conscious manager, we see that now we're dealing with devotees. Now can we step on everybody's toes? Can we bump people out of the way? Can we just, you know, crash in there like a bull in a china shop, right? As long as we're not dealing in China, right? It's just fine, right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that when you see people therefore cutting corners because it's more efficient, and if you ask them why you're doing that, and they simply say, well, it's practical, then you know you're dealing with mundane manager and the person's not actually conscious of Krishna. So, yes, in renunciation, once they finish the work, the result will be for Krishna. So that's what makes them a devotee. But the problem is what's the quality of the offering they gave to Krishna? The result was very nice in the way of the mechanics, but the culture was very bad. So it's actually a mixed devotional service. And that's why people don't appreciate it. You can say, why don't they like? I did such a perfect job. Many, many with a professional ability become frustrated working in society. Because they get, why don't they understand? One is they don't know, so they wouldn't know what's actually professional. But two is, who cares about professional? Right? That you're doing expert work to please Krishna, that's a proper standard. Like that. Everyone in the spiritual world is expert. And it's one of the 26 qualities of a devotee. You know, it doesn't say sometimes expert, occasionally expert, some are expert. You know what I'm saying? No, they're all expert. So that's standard, because you're doing it for Krishna, it has to be expert. But to be proud of that, and expect return for that, and recognition for that, that's how you know you're dealing with a neophyte. Right? Or if you see other symptoms that they're actually madhyama, then you know that this is where their major anarthas are. Right? Okay. Other anarthas have gone away, that's why they've advanced, and you can see that, but in that 25% that's left, you know, 75% is gone, but that 25, one of them is in this area. Or it is this area, whatever. You know, it can take up as much or less of space as it likes. Does that make sense? So one has to be able to discriminate. One can't just take it for granted that automatically that what you're doing is already perfect. Is it approved by Shastra? Why you're doing it, is it because it's approved by Shastra, or because it is the, you know, how you say, the, how would you translate, lokika? You know, just the popular thing to do. You know, it's the trend.
Yeah, it's a trend for a particular,
particular group in a particular place. You know, it's like you're speaking in Hindi, and then you have some very important point to say. You know, it's only a few words, so to emphasize that, you say it in English, then you go back to Hindi. Then you know, oh, they're in Bombay. You know, that's how you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's good. So that's the whole point, because if you're in Delhi, they the important point they say in Punjabi. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's how you... So that's the whole thing, is that you can tell by symptoms. But people in the group will think everything's going great, but the point is from outside the group you can tell it's not. So the idea is that we should be able to analyze for ourselves what's appropriate.
Rupa says management is an inevitable evil. So
it is an inevitable evil, but then if you take advantage of that, that you can be evil, then how is that devotional? Necessary evil. In English, necessary evil means it's something that no one really likes to do, but it needs to be done. just like washing dishes after dinner or throwing out the garbage are necessary evils. Passing stool is a necessary evil. You know what I'm saying? When you go walking out, you know, outside during the rainy season, you come back, you need to wash your shoes. It's a necessary evil. But if we with pride say it's a necessary evil, then this is exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, 100%. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. One has to learn to discriminate, because otherwise we'll get stuck in our modes. And if our modes are not according to Shastra, it'll be passion and ignorance. If our modes according to Shastra, we'll be stuck there. Remember, smartas do not develop love for Krishna. And they're doing everything according to Shastra, it's all right.
So you mean to say if you're a Shastric with management, then we can help you?
No. Here. Catch. See, a word, it has a potency. It's called the Abhida Shakti. That means, what is it actually meaning? What's it intending? So in here, a necessary evil means something that, let's say, Vaishnavs would rather be, you know, sitting and hearing and chanting and taking prasad. But management has to be done so you can do that. That's called a necessary evil. Not that management is therefore evil and I'm managing, therefore it's all right for me to be evil. That's not a proper logic. Evil means it's something that you don't necessarily want to be doing, but it has to be done. Right? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, you have a festival. Okay? And at this festival, what's happening? Right? Leading devotees are speaking, leading kirtan. Everybody else is listening, chanting. You know, they're all taking darshan of the deities. You know, there's the special abhishek and, you know, there's special prasad and all that. That's the festival, right? Why did it happen? So that's the part of the festival that you call the festival. Why did that happen?
Managing.
Because people are in the background managing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the necessary evil. Is that you can't just enjoy yourself at the festival. The management has to be done. You understand? We have to be very careful that we don't take that management as a necessary evil, therefore if I'm evil, it's all right. That's not how it works. Arjuna, Yudhishthira Maharaj, Priyavrata Maharaj, Rishabh Dev, Bharat Maharaj, do we ever hear that they're evil? No. Now, are you going to get any more of top managers than these people? Right? No. Not in for us. I mean, we can't be, you know, the Manu or something. Then we're talking bigger. But, you know, here. So, emperor of the world.
The people who also like that.
Sorry?
The people who also like that.
That's not an excuse. Just because people are not nice doesn't mean that you're not nice. We have to understand is that one has to give up this attachment to efficiency is God. God is in the detail, but efficiency is not God. If you want to see efficiency as God, that's all right. Then that means all the corporate persons of the world are nicely worshiping God. But is it in devotion? Is it out of pleasure for God? No, they're worshiping God. They're performing their duties to worship Krishna as God, as economics. But they're not developing devotion. So, out of all the individual souls in the, you know, universe who are worshiping God in their own way, according to their own values, which everybody is, even the ant, they do their ant stuff. They're looking for, you know, Krishna as their particular food, let's say like sugar. Right? And they're following their boss, they accept authority, they're doing everything. But they don't see Krishna as the goal of this. They don't even see Krishna involved in this. So devotees are different because they can see Krishna. So therefore they have to consider you know, how it's done. Okay, now, the Mahabharata is about Yudhishthira or Duryodhana?
Yudhishthira.
Okay, now technically as a more efficient manager who gets things done on the spot and gets effective results immediately, who's the better manager of the two? Yudhishthira or Duryodhana?
Duryodhana.
So, but, you know, the book's not about him. You understand? It's about Yudhishthira Maharaj. So that's the whole thing, is that just because people are evil doesn't mean that we don't know how to deal with evil people, but we can't be evil in dealing with evil. You understand? Yeah. So, yes, we have to. Yeah. So,
how one has to use one's evil so that he can become purified also?
You engage according to your nature. You engage your nature in Krishna's service for Krishna's pleasure. And so then, that means then you want to do that according to the direction of how Srimad Bhagavatam gives us direction. Detail, then we can get wherever we get it from, ideally from scripture, then further finer details in the modern environment you can get from there. If you only get it from the modern environment, it, you know, it'll work in certain circumstances, but after 6 months it may not work. You know, it doesn't have that lasting effect. So it's about doing that with knowledge, thinking of Krishna to please Krishna. That's what you're trying to do. And free from karma and jnana is that you're not doing it for the benefit you'll get out of it. Right? Because then the problem comes up is, yes, I'm doing it for Krishna, but I have the, and I may be, not be doing it because I'll get any particular benefit from it, but I do have the value of being in control and experiencing that control. So as I'm able to control the environment, that is my payment. That's still karma. That's still karma, Mr. Bhakti. So that ability to understand when you, that the control is coming from Krishna, and so when it's happening, it's coming from Krishna. When you can't control it, it's also coming from Krishna. Right? Because what happens? If something doesn't go right, then you do what? You adjust to the new situation and then deal in that. Does that make sense? Right? Isn't there a corporate saying about you can tell the difference? What that means, if you stick iron into heat, right? Does it remain hard? It loses its heat. So if it remains cool, it doesn't. It remains strong. I'm not sure if there's not a Carnegie or one of those guys. You know, in other words, when you become angry as a manager, then you've already lost it. You're not managing anymore. You're not in control. Anger's in control. Your attachments are in control. The modes of nature are in control. Though we think that, no, I'm established. No, it's another thing if this is how you have to deal with a particular mentality. But then you can do that from the mode of goodness because that's just how you deal. But they don't mean it. You know, it's just like parents. The child's doing something naughty, right? Very small child. So they make their eyes big. Are they actually angry? No. But that's what you have to do. And the kid, oh. You know? So if you do like the modern thing is that, no, no, it's okay. You know, you break things. It's not nice. And then just keep on doing. Doesn't help, or they actually become angry. Either way, the kid doesn't turn out nice. Okay? So that's the thing, is that to perform the action that needs to be done, but without attachment, that's in this case, management.
So if attachment is not there, that means it isn't goodness.
If attachment's not there and it's being done according to Shastra, because if we say attachment's not there, but it's not according to Shastra, what is it according to? Therefore, why are you choosing that? So that means there is attachment. It may be more subtle, you know, more refined, more considering more people, more broad, but it still will have that material effect. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Bhagavatam is dividing, refining how we see things so we can exactly see the difference between what's pure devotion and what's not. Right? So within the pastimes, we see the moods and all that because we're trying to get to the pure unalloyed devotion. So it's a particular mood. So if we can't see the differences, how we'll appreciate that? So example is given through the finities and variety within pure devotion. But we have to be aware of that. Because otherwise, I'm doing the form, therefore everything's perfect. That's nice. If you're following the proper form, then that's good. But then you have to then, in that same way, then say that smartas are very great personalities. Because what's the difference? You know what I'm saying? If we're saying, I'm doing this so perfectly, therefore that's devotion, then we've missed the point. No, devotion is you want to please Krishna. I have the ability to do things properly according to what Krishna recommends. So therefore, to please him, I will do that nicely. That's why then the better they are at doing their particular skills that are recommended, the humbler they are. Mm-hmm. But if you see that they become proud, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not talking, you know, how you say, dramatic, you know, demon proud. I'm talking in this case, you know, the sophisticated pride. You know what I'm saying? So it's still there. You know. So does that make sense? It's just like someone, let's say, who's, let's say you have, you know, some people on Marine Drive, right? And they've been there for generations. Right? Are they, when you deal with them, do they show pride in their wealth? Can you see it? Yes or no?
No.
Now, let's say that there's some Marwari fellow, he's just made it big, and really big. Can you see it? Yeah, he lets everybody know. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the difference. We have to understand is that, yes, in our circle, it may be, you know, you're a rapper, you have to wear a million, you know, chains and rings and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, but all other genres of singing goes on perfectly without all that. So you don't require that to sing. But amongst themselves, then that's cool. So, you understand? So amongst the corporate professional world, they have a particular ego that they take as standard. And so amongst themselves, they think they're being humble. But amongst everybody else, you have to remember, no one likes middle managers. The boss doesn't like them, the workers don't like them, and they don't like each other. So it's probably the worst position you could be in. Because no one appreciates them. You understand? So one has to be very, very careful, because this is the sector that all your management books and success books are coming out of. So you have to be very, very careful that to take only the milk and leave the water. Does that make sense? Because books are the basis, utility is the principle. Right? Like that. Then, what do you call it? No, preaching is the essence, utility is the principle, purity is the force. So if you're not using purity, it won't actually have the force. You may say it's utility, it's practical, it's this and that, necessary evil, all these kind of whatever the latest terms are that make us feel good about being bad. You know? You understand? We have to be very careful about this. It doesn't, you can understand it. We're professional, but it doesn't mean that the attitude is there. The attitude is a symptom that we need more purification. that we're doing nicely for Krishna, that's good. That part should stay. What we should remove is the impure attitude. Right? So that's the whole point. The management stays, the attitude goes. That's how you actually tell who's a manager for Krishna. Because if I can manage and maintain the attitude, who won't do that for Krishna? Who won't be inspired to manage for Krishna? But when we come to the platform, as we get purified, and that attitude goes down, and then we have to use our intelligence how to, you know, get around, you know, all the different situations that come up because of the different devotees and this and that and the situations. And it starts to then become, you know, a very big consideration, big effort. And because we're not getting that our value back for ourselves of being recognized for such great work and everybody respecting us and listening to us. And as that becomes either, you know, not important to us anymore, then we give up management. So that means then we could manage, but we weren't a manager. You understand? So in other words, what your duty is what can be done from the platform of goodness. That's your occupation. That's your nature. That's guna and karma. But when you can do it in passion or ignorance, but you can't do it in goodness, it means it's not yours. That's how you can tell. Right? So naturally then, as we perform devotional service, we get purified, then so many unwanted things go away. And so there may be activities that we find are very important, but as we get purified, we find actually they're not important for us. Other things are there. We don't have to, you know, be on every board. We don't have to be involved in every decision. We just need to, you know, we're good at one thing. We just need to get it done. And so then if someone else, you know, can come up and tell us what to do, we're happy to do that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is because then that need for control for ourselves goes down, then things start to balance properly. Because if you have control, who doesn't want to be the manager? Yes?
You made the statement, what can be done from the platform of goodness, that is our occupation.
Yes.
But Vaishyas, they are normally in fashion.
No. It's just, I was waiting for that one. See, is what makes something in goodness? Right? What makes passion, what makes ignorance? So goodness means it's according to Shastra and it's being done because that's what's supposed to be done. Right? That's goodness. Passion means it's according to Shastra. You're doing what should be done, but you're doing it because you want the benefit. Right? Ignorance means you're not doing what's according to Shastra, and you're just doing what you think is for your benefit, though actually it's not. You understand? So, for the karmis, they are naturally going to situate themselves because they are under the modes of nature. Right? So, if you have people, you have a proper structure, then those who are in the higher modes can detect those in the lower modes, and they will keep them in check. Right? Because technically, does the kshatriya just has to work with other kshatriyas that they don't, in trying to do their duty, don't bother, you know, your own duty. Right? Because they both have a kingdom, and, you know, each one wants the benefit for their citizens. So if another kingdom has something that will be a benefit for their own citizens, let's say like a river or something, they might try to make a move to get a hold of that. Does that make sense? So the other kshatriyas have to see that they don't do that. When they are just wanting things because it's good for them, the power, the this and that, then we're dealing with the lower level of kshatriyas, because that's not actually what kshatriya dharma is for. So they start to get closer to Vaishyas. You understand? Because there's more ignorance then. Right? So Brahmins, they don't have to control. Kshatriyas, they just have to keep in light because there's that touch of passion, but the part that's goodness, they don't have to worry about. So what do they have to deal with? Vaishyas and Shudras. Right? And Vaishyas have that touch of passion, so there's something there that you could work with the scriptures, do things properly. But because of the ignorance, there's too much attachment. And the Shudras, then, they tend to work on that attachment. And so, if Shastra supports it, nice. If Shastra doesn't support it, they really don't care. That's why they have to work under Dwijas, who have a tendency to work according to Shastra. Right? So that you're doing your own duty, that's according to goodness. What mode you're in, that's another question. So that's why the Brahmins are there. The Brahmins, they function in that. They keep the Kshatriyas that. They keep the Vaishyas in line. And then the three of them keep the Shudras in line. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, in other words, as Vaishnavas, what mode are we supposed to work under? Pure goodness. So where does the question come up of something else? You understand? That's the whole point. Because we have to remember, everybody manages. It's just nowadays, if your management makes money, then it's called management. And everybody else's management is not called management. Brahmins, that means, like we were saying before, the Abhishek happened. Why? Because the Pujaris put it together. That big offering happened. Why? Because they organized it. Do they get any profit for it? No. Right? No one's going to notice. You know what I'm saying? No one ever notices like that. So, and if somebody does notice, that's because of their own qualification. Right? So, therefore, they're managing. Does that make sense? But we don't technically call it's not administration. And we always have to remember that corporate management is never administration. You have an administrative element of it, but it's something that's below economics. While governance, administration is above economics. So we can say, no, but it's administration. Yeah, it's just like the rickshaw walter also writes down at the end of the day what his meter was when he started and what it is now, you know, before he goes in so that he gets his proper money. So is he an administrator? You understand? So that's the whole thing, is you have to... This is why if we get stuck on words, we'll never catch this point. We have to understand words are in the pursuit of pure devotional service. But if we use them mechanically and therefore only see their mechanical value, we'll miss the primary aspect of the words, what they're actually meant for. Because the whole Veda is only talking about pleasing Krishna. Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful about this. This doesn't mean we in any way lose our knowledge and abilities. That goes on nicely. But it should go on nicely from the platform of pure goodness. Because otherwise, goodness is never pure. There's always some passion and ignorance. That's why it's goodness. It's predominantly goodness. So if it's 60% goodness, it's called goodness. That means 40% is not. You understand? So that 40% is what we're talking about. So when and so what does that mean? It's for ourselves. It's, you know, there's some element where we're misapplying it. But as we see it, no, it's the Shastra is showing, the rules are there, okay, I'm pleasing the rules, but who gave the rules? Krishna. So that means following the rules pleases Krishna. So, but is it just about pleasing Krishna because then I feel good about myself, or is it pleasing Krishna because Krishna will feel good? It's a switch. That's what makes for pure devotional service. Right? Sarva dharmam parityaja means you give up all religion, just surrender to Krishna. Having done that, did Arjuna not fight? Did he fight or not? No. Yes. Yeah. So, what's happening there? But it said give up all religion. So why is he following Kshatriya Dharma and fighting? You understand? Because he gave his idea of giving up all religion in the beginning, just go to the forest. That's how we think giving up all religion means. I don't have to do anything. Or I can do anything. Right? But it means that we have to... we have to consider Krishna. So when I'm not doing the Dharma and the benefits from that, what I'll get from that, and then giving that to Krishna, I'm simply trying to please Krishna. Right? So Mother Jashoda, how does she please Krishna?
Cooking.
Right? Does Mother Jashoda go out to, you know, run around and play hide and seek with the cowherd boys when they go out at noontime? No. You understand? Right? Do the gopis come out there and play hide and seek? No. Do the cowherd boys come into the Mother Jashoda's house and start throwing things around and running around and yelling and screaming? No. You understand? Are the cows in the house? No, they're in the cow shed. You understand? So, according to your physical position, that's what you do for Krishna. So Arjuna, he wants to please Krishna. And so what can he do to please Krishna? He can do Kshatriya stuff to please Krishna. And of Kshatriya stuff, right now they're at a battle, and so therefore he can fight for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's working. So that's the platform that we try to function at. That's Daiva Varnashram. Daiva Varnashram doesn't mean, oh, we just mix it up like a chutney. Foolishly we try that, and how well does it always work out? You understand? And so when things don't work out, we actually can't explain why or correct it. We'll just say that the people were insincere or this or that, but actually they weren't trained. And then on top of that, if they don't apply it, then of course, there is the individual. They have to make the effort. But as a leader, you have to be able to tell the difference. And if you can't, how can you train someone according to their nature? You can say we're not the body. That's fine. But the point is we have to know 100% sure the body is the body. And you can't change that. You can say, I'm not the body, so I can fly. Can you fly? No. Let's say, do you know how to drive?
No.
So you're not the body, so you should drive Maharaj to the airport. Right? Why are we so caught up with all these externals? We're just interested in devotional service. We chant Hare Krishna. We do not care for the rules. How is this working for you? You understand? So if it doesn't work for driving, it doesn't work for anything else. We may foolishly think it is, but someone who actually knows can see it's not. So that's why we're very careful about these things. We have this... If we think we can break the rules because we're so smart, then it's just a sophisticated way of breaking Krishna's rules. We have to remember the rules are Krishna's rules. So you're not breaking a rule, you're using a higher level of the rule. And if we can't tell that difference, you know, in other words, we move closer back to the principle. But if we just work on the details and just negate one thing and do another thing like that, all we're doing is working within our own conditioned community. And it will never get any better than that. So as I say, if your community is more situated in goodness, it'll come out a little better. But, you know, as we go around the world, not all the communities are based on goodness. Does that make sense? Here, 1 second.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that Varnashram and Dharma can be given up unless we're
cannot be given up.
So can you explain how can be, what's the way it's been given up?
What way it's been given up?
What does it mean to give up Ruchi at all?
Well, first of all, if you have ruchi, it means you don't have any material attachments. They go away very quickly. They become very, very negligible. So, therefore, why does one do material activities? Right? For the taste you'll get. So if you have no taste in the material, only in the holy name, why will you be engaged in material activities? You understand? So you won't do any material activities. So then the next step is that, okay, so then what the situation you're in, what duties must be performed? Right? So if one's a householder, then he has to maintain the family and like that. But he doesn't necessarily need that new S-Class Mercedes. You understand? You know, the smart may be enough. Does that make sense? So the whole point is he just does what actually is needed to take care of the family in Krishna consciousness. But it's not by laziness. It's just only what's necessary. Does that make sense? Is that work? So now if one's a brahmachari, now one gets taste, does that mean now you don't have to follow what the temple commander says? Because you don't follow Varnashram anymore? But you're a brahmachari, so therefore how much is necessary, that much you do. But plans for, you know, world domination, you give up. You know? Does that make sense? You know, that you're going to get all the leftover halava and it will be in your locker, not any other brahmachari's locker. Right? Does that make sense? So, what's meaning there is that in this case, where you give up all duties, just sit down and chant and just depend upon Krishna. So you don't necessarily go beg or do anything. You can just chant and that's it. And whatever comes by Krishna's arrangement, then that's what you have. So the minimum standard you need to be able to do that is ruchi. You try it before then, it won't work. You need to have something to regulate your life, create a structure. Because if you have taste for the name, you can chant all day. That's not a problem. Right? So if there's other services for Krishna, then you'll do those. But if there's not, you'll just chant. So you situate yourself in how you can always be engaged. So if you're chanting. So if, therefore, for preaching you can do other things, then you'll do those things. And when you're not doing those things, you'll chant. But when you perform action has form. Form has a basis of knowledge and scripture. Therefore, whatever action I do according to scripture. That won't be given up. But an attachment to doing a particular work because of the benefit I'll get, that's given up. So you perform it because you're good, like we were saying. Someone's a manager, so therefore they're the temple president or a department head or Sankirtan leader because that's what they can do for Krishna. But they're not attached to the benefits and results and this and that. Right? They just want to see that the service goes on nicely for Krishna, and they can do that. Does that make sense? So that way then you move from Varnashram to Daiva Varnashram. And then Daiva Varnashram means just how much is useful in Krishna's service. You know what I'm saying? So let's say you have a grihastha who's a temple devotee. That was the moment you could have all cracked up laughing. But that was before, 60s, 70s, like that. Yeah. So then you don't have to worry about money or a place to stay or food. You just worry about doing your service. But you happen to be married so that in, you know, off times, then, you know, that time is spent and all that, and it gives you that emotional equilibrium that you can, you know, apply yourself. Right? Does that make sense? So that, and with time, is that's not necessary, then it's just a comfortable position in which to serve Krishna. You know what I'm saying? There's cooperation, you can do so. So to Krishna, it works out nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, one's comfortable in an environment that uses more things, so therefore if that is shared, then it makes it easier. Well, the brahmachari needs nothing, so it's really easy to manage. Right? No? Okay, just make sure that didn't change also. Okay. Does this make sense? Yeah?
When we see in our services, this is related to the previous point which you have mentioned, we see that there's this aspect of devotion to Krishna and
yes.
also the skill of the service required.
Right.
But then we see that those who have better skills and they're good at things, they get more encouraged, you know, to get bigger services and further and all. So we have a minimum necessary skill for the service. So because it comes from top, that way we tend to also work a lot over, you know, developing more and more skills and increasing the standard of service. While our nature is to actually focus on consciousness and purity and all that.
Yeah.
Like, so how do we get rid of the situation? Because we see...
But the two go together. How do you express consciousness? Let's say one's Krishna conscious. Okay, so now you're Krishna conscious. So then that means we're a servant of Krishna, right? So that means we're going to do some service. And so to do some service, that means there's some activity. Activity requires knowledge, right? So therefore, then, what service will we do to Krishna in that area that we have the knowledge and skills for? Does that make sense? That so the two don't have a problem. It's just like, well, you know, I go into the kitchen and I want to cook, but there's all these pots and pans and jars with different spices and all that. And it's just so complicated. How do I work all this out? You understand? No, it's the pots and pans are for cooking. So in other words, one's knowledge and skill is what one uses to express your devotion to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm trying to point out here, what was all this about... The knowledge and skill only has its value as much as it is being used to please Krishna. Otherwise, it's useless. It doesn't have its own value. We can say, no, but economics has an important part, role to play. That's attachment. No, doing things for Krishna, serving Krishna, that's the important thing. Now, if that requires money, that's why we need money. So we have to know is that it's not the top thing. Because in the corporate world, what's the top? In the social orders, what is the top? Do they respect Brahmins? No. Do they care for the government? No. You know, that's why they don't like the IRS, right? Right. So, therefore, it's whoever is the biggest, fattest, evilest businessman, he's the top of the pile. He's God. Right? And everybody else, as you can use them, then they're okay. Now, shooters, of course, are going to be on the bottom. You know? And Kshatriyas and Brahmins, you know, as you can use them for your betterment of your business, nice. Does that make sense? You know, so we have to understand is that we have to see things according to the perspective that Krishna gives. So in other words, economics is necessary, but without governance, there's no peace by which you can do economics. And governance is not going to happen unless there's proper Shastric understanding. Right? And the goal of Shastric understanding is devotion to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's going on here, is that one has to see is they don't contradict each other. One's primary, one's secondary. What comes up, why we become confused, is we can't tell what's primary and what's secondary. That's why there's confusion. Mm-hmm. You know, but I have to do the skill. That means I need the knowledge. To have the knowledge, then I have to get educated. Therefore, I have to, you know, not be doing service in the temple, and I have to be going to college to get that knowledge so that I'd like this and that. And then doing that is tough out there, you know, and all that. So many difficulties. So it'd be so much easier if I was married and had the support of the family. So therefore, then I need to get married. And then doing that, now I actually have to really do, you know, now I can use that knowledge and skills. I have to get money to support the family, take care of everything like this and that. Do we see the direction we're going here? Yeah. So is it because we're taking that as primary? We take Krishna consciousness as primary, then it's, we can do service. Someone has more knowledge and skill than you, and you have less, but it's in the same area. Why can't you just help them?
Yes.
Right? Wow. You understand? This is the disease. The corporate world is, no, you have to be the number one. You know, it's like that, what was it? That story of where Prabhupada was meeting the executives in Dainipan. Like that. And the guy was a, you know, middle manager, but one of the lower guys. And they had all put their cards on the table, and his was on the bottom. Right? So then he asked, Prabhupada asked, so what do you want in life? He went over very, I say, dramatically, took his card from the bottom of the pile and slapped it on the top. Okay. He did become the top of the company. Yeah. By Prabhupada's blessings. So the point is that's it. But in Krishna consciousness, we're servant of the servant of the servant. We have to remember that. So the point is you balance it out. I can do this skill for Krishna, and I can be engaged all day. And I can do on the job training, because this other person knows more, and by working in that area I will come up to the level of my ability. You can't go beyond that anyway. Right? Does that make sense? So by working with them, I will learn more anyway, because all they're doing is applying the knowledge they have. And if I, you know, have the proper attitude and this, I can always ask if there's something I don't understand, so they can explain it, and then and that way I learn. Right? Or I can go to school to learn all these things. And then where's the time for doing your service? Okay, you get up in the morning, you chant your japa and this and that, and then after that you're gone. You know what I'm saying? And so you can say, no, it's for more service, but that other devotee's already doing the more service, and you could learn on the job. Because, you know, how you say, quote, unquote, in the real world, you walk in with your fancy degree that you spent 3-4 years getting. But the knowledge, the point, what you're actually going to use on the job, you're going to learn in 3 weeks while you're there. So for the guy that's going to hire you, he just looks at, if you could go through that 3-4 years and focus and get good grades, that means you have potential to be focused in the workplace. That's all it means to him. That's it. And if it needs more than that, it will say. It will say, this degree required 10 years of experience. Yes. Right? But if you walked in with 10 years of experience and didn't have the degree, you have a shot at getting the job. But if you walk in with the degree and not the 10 years, you're going to get nothing. If you walk in and say, I've been doing this for the last 10 years, but this degree wasn't around when I was there. I just got the, you know, just the regular old thing. So, you know, but I've been working in this country, this is my resume, and I'm looking, go, okay. So, because he's a self-made guy. He doesn't have the knowledge. You know, he'll work better. He won't think, I'm a great guy because I have this skill. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point is one has to know that there is the etiquette amongst the middle management. Then there's the reality on the guys who actually run the companies. You know what I'm saying? Like, what degree did Srinathji have that qualified him to do the job he did.
Chemical engineering.
He made buses. And then, what about Krishna Chandra? You understand? See, the problem is you're not even catching what I'm saying because you're actually trying to figure out what the degree is. They don't need any degree. Right? All around Bombay, there's Marwaris coming out of the building's ears that don't have any degree at all. Nothing. Right? If they have a degree, it's only because it's social prestige. That's all. But they have an MBA. Do they need an MBA? No, because an MBA doesn't teach anyone to be a businessman. You understand? So that's only because he's got an MBA. Okay, but where did you get your MBA? You know, then that makes the, then that's the whole strategy. Oh, from Harvard. Like this. But it doesn't matter. You understand? He's going to run his business without doing anything to do with that degree. Because the point is who would spend all day dealing with crazy people trying to teach them economics as a professor at a university and get paid peanuts if you actually understood the knowledge? You understand? If he actually had that knowledge and he could do business, why isn't he? Because he can't. He's a teacher. His field happens to be economics. So in other words, that's not how you learn business. You learn business in seeing the difference between what you can get and what you can sell it for and what's the profit. And where I can get it from and who I can get it to and how that will happen. That's it. Did I leave anything out? You understand?
Yes.
So there are people that just see it. They're walking down the street. They see something. They see people. They see a market. They see this. That's how they do. They can find it. You go buy something, you go to the shop. You're happy you can get it there. Remember one Marwari devotee? He ran the shop here in Mayapur. And, he found guys that he was getting from. Then after a few years, he'd find out the guys just by accident. He'd find out who they're getting it from. So then he'd switch to them. Now he thinks, okay, now it's happening. After a few more years, he'd find out where they're getting it from. And he says, it just keeps on going. Like that. So that's the whole thing. But they can figure it out because they're there. There's something, some nuance of something he said. This is that. Yeah, well, it's just, yeah, the supplier didn't show up and this. Oh, where do you get it from? Oh, yeah, no, the guy said he's coming next Tuesday. Don't worry, I'll have it there for you. So where are you on Tuesday? Right there. You want to see who the guy is. You know what I'm saying? So that's how you find it out. You can do that. Anybody else wouldn't. You just go, oh, it's coming on Tuesday. My man's bringing. Okay, I'll be there. You understand? That's the whole point. The Vaishya brain. There's no school to teach a Vaishya brain or a Kshatriya brain or a Brahmin brain. Right? Shudra's default. Then you have within that specialty. Then that's Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Brahmins. Understand? So that's the whole thing, is this mentality has to go along with it. So we have to understand is that in this modern world, that corporate mentality may be seen as the top, but we have to see where does it actually fit in the Vedic standard. Does that make sense? Then we actually start to see things as they are. Because otherwise, if we just think it's like that, then, because just like here, it's like I said, you have knowledge and skill in an area, someone else has the same but more than you. So then your thing is, what can I do to bring myself to that standard? When I said, why don't you just assist them? It was like a lightning bolt. You know, if you were in a bathtub, you could run around saying Eureka or something, right? You know? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that there's no need. Now, if you have to, someone's a grihastha, they have to increase their knowledge in an area because what area they're in doesn't make enough money. Then, yes, they put in that time. But the point is where does that time come out of? Yeah, so the point is you have time for an occupation. You have time for sadhana. Mm-hmm. And you have time for family. Mm-hmm. That's it. There's not more time in the day. So in family, it can be your own time, quality time with relatives, or, you know, doing things around the house, you know, for the family, you know, a variety of things. Right? Just like your sadhana has variety, you know, and your occupation has variety. So now, if I want to increase my money and occupation by putting in more time, where does that come out of? So it comes out of either your sadhana or a family, right? Now, are your japa beads going to complain? No. Is your wife going to complain?
Yes.
Yes. So where does it come out of? Right? So that's the way it works. So now that's where it comes down to how much do you actually need? How much is what you actually need and how much is what you think you need? They're two different things. So that's then where it comes back to the key thing, what I'm getting at this whole last hour and some odd of discussion, is the attitude. So unless we have the proper attitude in understanding devotional service, we can't understand the difference between primary and secondary. What's important and what's not. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's it. We have to stop now. This is the end of the first class. We'll start the next class at 8. So if you're still here, then you can continue asking.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavi Ka Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.